This is the VT Ukraine War Update with VT's Mark Dankoff, right here, right now, on
VT Radio. Let's go. With host Johnny Punish.
And we're back on VT Radio with Senor Dankoff hiding out somewhere in the United States. I think he is. Or maybe he's not. I don't know. Where are you, Mr. Dankoff?
In Schulterkensee, bitte. Herr Dankoff.
So basically you're in Thailand.
I'm a sen. That's in Thailand, yeah. I'm in Thailand with a German white supremacist group, and we're doing some stuff undercover for Jonas C. Alexis, and that's all a joke, yes. Folks, so that Jonas doesn't get thrown in jail in South Korea.
There you go. Okay, let's get right to it, Mr. Dankoff. Okay. I want to talk about a couple things. Let's get serious for a moment. The Russian-Ukraine war, what's the update? Where are we? And where is it going right now? Go for it.
Well, I think it's going exactly where Mercurius and Christoforou of the Duran said that it would go. And Larry Johnson and Brian Berletic of the New Atlas Military Summary Channel, Philip Giraldi and Mike Whitney. It's going precisely according to schedule. What we are seeing is this, as was explained by the Duran at the time, when Serevikin took over the operational end of things in the Ukrainian theater, the first thing he did was execute a brilliant tactical withdrawal from the Kherson region. That was interpreted as a Russian defeat, which is absurd. He simply engaged in a tactical withdrawal from an area that at the time was logistically unsupportable. He fully allowed the Ukrainians to take over Kherson City. Now Zelensky's people are finding out how unsupportable it is logistically to presently being trying to control Kherson City. Now, having said that, the most recent developments are these. As predicted, Serevikin did his job. He stabilized the Russian position opposite the Zelensky line, basically between Seversk and the Kherson region. And then, of course, the Russians engaged in a lot of airstrikes, principally against Ukrainian targets and infrastructure. And there we're talking about, of course, railroads to some extent, but particularly anything that had to do with Ukrainian electricity and power. So with all of that hammering continued, you then reached a point to where all of a sudden, Gerasimov, the overall head of the general staff of the Russian military, the most powerful military man in all of Russia, he suddenly takes over the Ukrainian operation from Serevikin and makes Serevikin his deputy. Once again, these neocon elements and these Zionist elements in the Western press reported this entirely incorrectly. They said, well, you know, this is a demotion for Serevikin and the Russians. You know, what are they doing now with Gerasimov in this situation? Isn't this an indication that things are really going against Russia? Not at all. As a matter of fact, it's an indication that Serevikin did exactly what he was supposed to do, which was to execute a brilliant tactical withdrawal from the Kherson region to get east of the Dnieper River and to stabilize the Russian position opposite this Seversk to Kherson so-called Zelensky line. Now with Gerasimov taking over and keeping in mind you've had this partial mobilization of these Russian troops, that between 300,000 mobilized troops and 80,000 volunteers, there have been at least 380,000 people added to the Russian manpower effort as they began to understand that their special military operation made several key mistakes, not the least of which was assuming that with the manpower of the Luhansk and Donetsk People's Republics alone, that they could prevail in this thing. They discovered that that was wrong after a so-called Ukrainian offensive in Kharkiv region to the north that largely succeeded on a temporary basis because the Russians were in a manpower rotation and virtually didn't have any significant infantry force to oppose the Ukrainians in that area. Now they do, and what we are seeing is a situation where Colonel Douglas McGregor basically has indicated that you have 540,000 Russian troops that surround Ukraine. at various points along Ukrainian borders. All of a sudden, you have a situation where the Russians are increasingly looking like they're launching an offensive in Zaporozhye. The big news militarily is they have conquered Soledar and Sol right near Bakhmut, which is where the Ukrainians have concentrated their forces and have mistakenly tried to hold on to Bakhmut at all costs. They're paying a ridiculous cost, a horrible cost in the loss of human life, as well as in a loss of equipment. And so at this particular juncture, as the Soledar-Bakhmut region is progressively crumbling, the Russians are taking advantage of this as Zelensky is panicking and has moved forces, transferred forces from the Zaporozhye region apparently into the Soledar-Bakhmut region to try and hold that at all costs. All of a sudden, Zaporozhye is experiencing some Russian advances. And then in the north, in Seversk and in Kupiansk, the Russian military tempo there is starting to pick it up again. And there are several wild cards in all of this. There is a Russian buildup along with in Belarus in conjunction with the Belarus forces themselves. How many troops are there remain to be seen. There are all kinds of estimates as to how many troops are gathered in this Russian-Belarusian front. But Colonel McGregor hypothesizes, as well as Lieutenant Colonel Daniel Davis, that quite conceivably you could start seeing a major Russian military offensive being launched from Belarus, perhaps against Kiev directly. But the big news, of course, is that just as the Zelensky line is starting to crumble because the Russians have adjusted their strategy and are now taking the initiative in the war again, to me, the most telling thing is that the United States, and this has been explained by all of these sources that I have just mentioned that I get my information from, the United States has discovered it simply cannot keep up with Russia's artillery and Russia's artillery shell production, particularly with these 155 millimeter shells. The Ukrainians were shooting up every month the same amount of 155 millimeter artillery ammunition that the U.S. produces in an entire year. So that's finally ceased, but the long and the short of it is that Mercurius and others have cited the fact that when you look at the stats on this from knowledgeable military sources, Brian Berletic of the New Atlas in particular, the Russians are firing off about 20 artillery shells now to every one that the Ukrainians are able to launch. And when you look at this latest set of Western military equipment that's about to go to Zelensky's forces, it's clear that they're moving completely away from this notion of artillery pieces like M777s, for example, and HIMARS, and from 155 millimeter artillery ammunition. The West is getting into a hodgepodge of tanks and armored infantry vehicles that not only are very intensive in terms of maintenance. The Ukrainians are going to have a very difficult time maintaining this hodgepodge of weapon systems that they're not familiar with, by the way. And then there's the whole issue of the fact that the Russians with their artillery, and I think we're going to see a new wave of Russian airstrikes that will really turn this thing into its final phase. And I have made reference explicitly to one Russian journalistic source on this in my Night Thoughts for Veterans Today, who basically has agreed with me, who knows next to nothing other than the fact that my dad was an effective military strategist a few thousand years ago. But I have always believed that the Russian Air Force needed to take out these four Dnieper River bridges. The other things that the Russians need to destroy are these tunnels in Western Ukraine that clearly are a primary conduit for NATO and American military equipment and whatever ammunition they can dredge up that is being primarily shipped from Eastern Poland. Those two air targets need to be dealt with. If the Russians can do that in the not too distant future, then it will really be all over. And then, of course, the only other remaining wild card in this is not simply whether or not the Russians commit to some sort of an offensive with Belarus coming from Belarus, north of Ukraine, but we've got anywhere from 200,000 to 300,000 Polish troops in eastern Poland. What are they there for? Are they simply paranoid about a Russian invasion of Poland, which I don't think the Russians are planning? Or is NATO really going to talk the Poles into intervening in an act of total desperation, intervening with these troops into Western Ukraine? That would be a catastrophe because they are obviously, the Poles are a member of NATO. Questions about whether or not Article 5 of NATO would then be invoked in all of this thing. So you have to hope that these
quite neocons serious.
Quite serious. And when you start seeing these reckless drone attacks that have been launched on Russia, including one in the middle of Russia, which attacked their key strategic bomber base. You know, this is quite worrisome. And basically, after being humiliated in Afghanistan, after being staved off thus far in their desire to utilize Israel to attack Iran, the stalemate in Iraq, the fact that Putin and Erdogan seem to be getting the better of these Zionists in regard to Syria, the people that have gotten the Western world into this mess in Ukraine, which should not have happened, need not have happened, where unbelievable loss of life and equipment and logistics and economic hardship globally have occurred as a result of this. Are they going to dumb down in this as they continue losing? Are we going to see something so reckless that it could involve the apocalypse? You have to wonder. I don't want to be melodramatic, but this Kirill, this patriarch of the Russian Orthodox Church, issued an explicit warning a few days ago on the English language Russia Today network, basically warning of apocalypse, that if these armaments shipments continue to Zelensky, and if there are attempts to attack Crimea, if there are further reckless attempts to attack Russia itself, then he really said that, in effect, I believe he used the word apocalypse quite clearly. The arch primate of the Russian Orthodox Church was referring to a global conflict that would go nuclear very quickly. I don't think he said that lightly. I don't think he said that without authorization of really highly placed people in the Russian government. And you can imagine who those two or three or four or five people would be. But this is incredibly serious. And I don't think that the Western public, at least in the United States, they're starting to awaken a little bit in Europe, I think, the average people, when you see some of these demonstrations in France in particular, Germany secondarily, indications of major political discontent in Britain and Spain. So some of this is starting to seep out in international media, but I don't think the American public yet grasps just how close we could be to catastrophe. Let's hope that they wake up very, very soon.
Yeah. Question for you, because this weekend I was watching the Davos, Switzerland meeting over there, and the Polish president was on there screaming that he's all into, you know, more weapons and, you know, getting into the Ukraine and more and more and more. He's into it, right? And the head of NATO confirmed that. He said, okay, we definitely want Ukraine in the NATO, and it's going to happen. I mean, they're all in. This is all in. Even the Canadian foreign minister is like, yes, let's go. You know, what are they doing?
Yeah, well, I guess they're going to take the gay flag that was lowered in the Kabul retreat and elevate it to a new position in a Western offensive or something. But when I hear this kind of lunacy, and it's lunacy that we're talking about here, Johnny. This is not simply wrong. It's not simply criminal. It's not simply not a question. not a question of the national sovereignty and national security of any of these Western countries being threatened. This, to me, totally discredits NATO. It totally discredits the World Economic Forum. And if there's a silver lining to this dreadful war, which has had so much loss of life involving Ukrainians, they have paid through the nose for this. Many innocent Russians have been killed as well, but the Ukrainians have paid a dreadful price. The average Ukrainian, these Ukrainian soldiers, these Ukrainian citizens in these villages, these average people that attend these Orthodox churches.
Show to your public, right? I mean, average people.
These are people being victimized by these criminals at the World Economic Forum and at Davos. And if there's a silver lining in this horrible tragedy, it is that the Eurasian economic, political, and military concept is largely growing and has a full head of steam, largely because of this brand of criminal lunacy. And what these World Economic Forum people don't realize, I trust they don't realize it, and what their puppets like Zelensky and this lunatic in Poland and the current leaders of the German government, the British government, and Macron in France, and Ursula von der Leyen and with the European Union and all the rest of these folks, what they don't realize, they're in the process of destroying themselves. That's the good news. Now, the sad thing is they're going to get a lot of innocent people killed, potentially in a global tragedy, as they're destroying themselves. So the good news is they're in the process of literally destroying themselves. They don't recognize this apparently because of a power lust. The downside is that because of their strategies or lack of strategies, lack of morality, lack of common sense, that where they have descended into literal lunacy, a lot of innocent people are going to die. And this thing, as it expands, we hope it doesn't mushroom. I think you know what I'm referring to there. But think of all of these innocent kids in the United States, all these innocent kids in these EU countries that could easily be conscripted to fight in something where there is no legitimate moral reason, no legitimate case for protection of national sovereignty, legitimate national defense. This is all about globo homo. And when the average citizens of the Western European countries and the United States and Canada and the Aussies and the people in New Zealand and so forth, if and when they ever wake up, the good news is that maybe this would be their last chance to rise up, to take over their countries again, to put these nuts out of business, and to basically reestablish national sovereignties again, destroy the World Economic Forum, destroy Soros's Open Society Foundation, destroy the IMF and the World Bank and all of these other jokers, and get back to running their own countries again, recovering their countries politically, economically, culturally, and otherwise, and staying out of other people's business in other countries where they should not be. That's what we have to hope happens, and I think it can happen, but in the meantime, we're risking a global holocaust here, and I think there are some very responsible people. Kirill is one example on the Russian side. Medvedev, another, has made reference to this on the Russian side. And then, of course, some of our best thinkers, and I'm referring to Philip Giraldi, Ron Paul, Paul Craig Roberts, Mike Whitney, the guys at the Duran, Larry Johnson, son of the American Revolution, longtime CIA analyst, and Brian Berletic at the New Atlas. These are all smart, intelligent, rational, analytical people who have convinced me that we are on the edge of catastrophe if we don't round all of these people up very soon and give them an extended vacation in Guantanamo with a key thrown away.
Right. Right. You know, I was speaking with the senior editor for VT, Dr. Kevin Barrett, this morning, and he was referring to, this is not a one world government yet, that doesn't exist. It's not the eye on top. What's happening is a battle royale between the American empire, the Zionist empire, if you will, the Western empire, whatever you want to refer to it as, and they're fighting for control of the world so they can get that one world government to do it their way with their system. So this is what's going on. China's on the other side. Russia's over there. We're not there as a one world government, but everybody's fighting to, well, like the song says, everybody wants to control the world.
Exactly. Yeah. And I would emphasize again for average Americans, if you understand any semblance of the old American Republic, if you understand anything about the Constitution of the United States, if you understand anything about St. Augustine's just war theory, if you understand anything about the subversive character of this cabal that has hijacked your own government and wants to get your kids killed on behalf of imposing and exporting this evil satanic system globally to everyone, well, then go right ahead. But legitimate American Christians and nationalists should understand that Dr. Kevin Barrett is speaking the truth here. We're not there yet, but that is exactly what this is about. And I think you'll recall, Johnny, the first time that you and I spoke on this show, and I was talking about the Russian-Ukraine conflict, your title referred to it as the Battle Royal. Over whether or not the New World Order was going to be imposed. Dr. Kevin Barrett, who's one of the smartest people in the business, he definitely agrees with this. I concur. We just have to take a deep breath and to wonder if the American public is going to turn off the NFL playoffs just long enough. And yeah, I admit I watched this stuff yesterday just to have a laugh at Jerry Jones' expense at the end of the game in Santa Clara. But aside from that rather sadistic enjoyment, the fact is that this could be a year of unbelievable developments, the likes of which we have not seen since I was a 7-year-old boy in the Cuban Missile Crisis, where by the grace of God, the worst did not happen, but we came within an inch of it happening. And this time, with an American military and with American political leadership that is nowhere near as good or as smart or as moral as what we had 60 years ago, these folks could well get all of us killed. Let's just put it that bluntly.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we'll keep following it and keep talking about it and hopefully keep sharing the knowledge with our fellow Americans and fellow people around the world to get the word out and stay aware, because they're going to sell it to you as you're going to defend freedom. You got to defend freedom, right? Go get yourself killed for freedom, right?
Yeah, like this, the freedom of this NHL player for the Philadelphia Flyers, right? Ivan Prokhorov, I believe is his last name, or Provanov. Provanov, I believe, is Ivan's last name. Philadelphia Flyers guy who did not want to participate in the Philadelphia Flyers NHL-sponsored LGBTQ Pride event the other night at the Forum in Philadelphia. He wasn't trashing the event. He wasn't making fun of the event. He simply said that as a Russian Orthodox Christian that he was could not participate. He was leaving it to other people to determine what they would like to do. He wasn't judging anyone else. He simply was asking for his religious faith to be respected. And when you see the statements coming out of some of these people connected with a National Hockey League and a National Hockey League affiliated news media, it is pure Stalinism. And the notion that the Trudeau regime or the Biden regime or these regimes in Western Europe, for that matter, in Australia and New Zealand represent freedom, these people are Stalinists. These people who want to combine the worst elements of a multinational corporate capitalism that has no sense of morality whatsoever, that is purely involved in the aggregation of power of this elite cabal and all of these different regimes. But this is combined with a brand of cultural Marxism that is aimed at attacking Christianity and any responsible version of Islam as well, or any other traditionalist religion that does not think that a promotion of the LGBTQ agenda to their children in their schools or in their sporting arenas or in their cartoons or anything else is something that we ought to be doing. Now, when you take that position, which I certainly do, and you're assailed as a bigot who should not have any rights, to one's religious beliefs or clinging on to a rather historic position in Western jurisprudence that involved natural law, then we really can understand that this war against Putin's Russia is not simply about stealing other people's sovereignty and national resources and imposing this crappy banking system upon them and having our worst arms dealers around making a lot of money. This is about imposing a satanic morality that is designed, like in the case of Russia, to destroy the Russian Orthodox Church and Russian Orthodox Christianity, specifically as the backbone of a Russian nationalistic renaissance that is quite, to me, quite reaffirming to watch post-Bolshevik Russia. And it may well be that what we need to understand in this conflict is that the United States has engaged in an unbelievable role reversal with what was Soviet Jewish Bolshevik USSR, and now the United States appears to be, in terms of traditional morality and threats to other countries, I'd have to go on board as saying, as an America First alt-right nationalist of Pat Buchanan, Ron Paul, Charles Lindbergh orientation, that the biggest threat to global peace anywhere in the world now is the United States and Western Europe's governments and NATO and the Israelis and this demonic alliance that they have going, which is designed to create something that is anything but rooted in freedom and freedom of expression in a society for the local community and families in the local community and so forth. This is about an evil system that murders Alexander Dugin's daughter in Moscow last August 20th. This is an evil system, obviously totally married to the Epstein-Maxwell Mossad-oriented sex trafficking ring, where I don't think there's been a single conviction yet. Just a disgrace. So this is about good and evil, but unfortunately the United States government is the embodiment of evil in this conflict with Putin, and it's the embodiment of evil in what it continues to try and sell to its own people at home that is not in their interest.
Right. We're all hoping for the best, but at this point, I can't see that light yet. You know what I mean?
I don't see it yet either.
Yeah, it's scaring. I see it moving in the wrong direction, not the right direction, and that's really scary. You know, it's not good business. You know, it's not good for everybody. You know, you're gonna have a blow up on the stock market. People are gonna lose their wealth, or there's gonna be all kinds of weird repercussions from all of this if it gets worse. You know what I mean?
Exactly. And in this particular situation, again, the truly disgusting thing up to now has been the absolute passivity of the American public over more years than you and I can count, over more years than you and I have been alive, Johnny. And when you start looking at the sinking of the Lusitania, the creation of the Federal Reserve Board, the imposition of a direct federal income tax on American citizens, you start looking at Pearl Harbor, you start looking at all of these more recent developments that have involved the Kennedy assassinations and the Pollard spy case and 9/11 and now this Russian-Ukrainian tragedy. The American public, the question we have to raise, and this is why against all of my own personal well-being, I chose to put my career as a graduate theological student and my PhD endeavors and my career and calling as a Lutheran pastor aside to try and wake up the American public since 9/11. I have to admit that thus far you could make the case that I've been as much a failure as the people that have been trying to get the Dallas Cowboys to the Super Bowl in the last 27 years. I have the best of intentions, but in terms of whether it's coaching the Dallas Cowboys or trying to awaken my own countrymen and countrywomen, you'd have to say that this all basically sucks.
Right, right. Yeah. Speaking of the NFL, I don't know if I told you this. I want to pivot away from this for a second. I was at the Super Bowl with the last Dallas Cowboys won.
Now, Switzer coached that team, did he not? Barry?
I think so.
That was the last of Jimmy Johnson's teams, and Barry Switzer got the Cowboys over the top that last year after Jones inexplicably let Jimmy Johnson go. And then, of course, after that last Super Bowl that was won really with Johnson's personnel and concept, it's all been straight downhill since then. And, you know, as you watch this sort of thing, you'd have to say that as bad as the American political and military leadership has been, especially since from 9/11 onward, I'd almost be willing to get all of these people out of there and to give Jerry Jones a chance to take over our military and our foreign policy. He might actually be better. I mean, that's maybe a scary concept, maybe. But we know where these current people are going to take us. So maybe Jerry needs to sell the Cowboys and run for the presidency. If he's running against any of these global homo candidates, I'm going to say, as sleazy as Jerry tends to be, I'd vote for him. That's how desperate this is.
Yes. Well, on that note, before I let you go today, we got the four remaining teams in the NFL finals. That's the Cincinnati Bengals and the Kansas City Chiefs. Of course, the 49ers with the Eagles. What's your big prediction?
Well, my big prediction, I'll say this much, and then I know you have to cut this nonsense off. Yeah. But at one time, folks, at one time, I was a knowledgeable pro football bettor. I'm not proud of that. That was in my younger days. I never bet with illegal bookies, but when I lived in Chicago and I was a ball boy for George Allen's Chicago Blitz and the old USFL while I was in seminary, and going all the way back to my dad's days with college football and pro football, where he taught me everything I ever knew about football. The fact is that I was pretty good when it came down to laying down money and point spreads and everything else. Take anything I tell you with a complete pinch of salt, as Alexander Mercurius would put it, as a British person. I think that in the one game, I think Cincinnati will upset Kansas City. I'm picking the Bengals to win by 6 points in Kansas City. And in the other game, Philadelphia playing at home against the 49ers. I like all the teams, but after watching the way the Eagles punched out the New York Giants in this last game, I don't think the 49ers are going to be humiliated by that. But I'm going to go with Philadelphia by 7.
Wow. Okay. In the Kansas City game, this is what I was shocked at. I watched the Jacksonville game versus the Kansas City Chiefs, and I was shocked that they did not defensively attack Patrick Mahomes. They were rushing 4 the whole game. And this guy was on one leg right from the beginning of the game. I don't think the Bengals are going to make that mistake.
They're not going to make that mistake. And, you know, that's the exact mistake. And Leslie Frazier is a good defensive coordinator with the Bills. But last year he made that mistake against Cincinnati and going into a virtual prevent defense late in the game that I think cost Buffalo. Folks, if there's one thing that we hope that any coach in a position to win a big game learns – unless he's coaching a team I don't happen to like, these prevent defenses and soft zones and 3 and 4 man pass rushes against a quarterback like Mahomes or a quarterback like Jalen Hurts, are going back to my generation with Namath and Sonny Jurgensen and Johnny Unitas and Bart Starr and so forth. There's one thing that these kinds of prevent defenses, nickel defenses and soft zones and 3-man pass rushes prevent, and that's winning. Yes. Okay. I think all of these teams are not going to make that mistake in these games. Andy Reid's not going to make that mistake with Kansas City. Certainly our very fine head coach with the Bengals and Cincinnati isn't going to make that mistake. And then, of course, the coaches with the Eagles and the 49ers, when they square off in Lincoln Financial Field this coming week, neither one of those teams, head coaches or defensive coordinators, are going to make that mistake. All of these passers had better get ready, and it may well be that the teams that will win these two games are the two teams that prevail at the line of scrimmage, and I think offensively the teams that can establish the run to give give their quarterback a better chance at a semblance of pass protection, that may well determine the outcome. along with the usual special teams mistakes and turnovers that, try as we might to say, it won't be a factor with teams this good. It's almost always a factor in a playoff game.
Yeah. You know, I think that in the Kansas City case, I think those are both great teams. They're the two best teams in the AFC for sure, obviously. A little bit better than the Bills, obviously. But with Mahomes, I'm shocked. The guy literally has an Achilles heel problem. Has a sprained ankle. He was hobbling on one leg, and they let him stand there and throw the ball. I was throwing my shoe at the TV doing the old George Bush thing, you know, throw the TV at the shoe, right? It's like, what are you doing? And I don't think the Bengals will make that mistake. I think they'll put seven on the line. And they're going to put five in his face every play. And every other play, he's going to be faced with a decision. Can I run out of the pocket? And if his ankle still hurts, he can't. He's a wounded duck. And with a wounded duck, you know what you got to do.
Jacksonville made that mistake against Mahomes. But getting back to a bad analogy between warfare and NFL football, particularly since we've been talking about all this stuff on game. The air. The Surovikin and now Gerasimov, were they coaching Cincinnati this weekend, they would be conducting the kind of strategy that you're about to see in this Russian general offensive. So Patrick Mahomes is a great quarterback, folks, and I don't hope nothing happens to him. But when you've got a high ankle sprain and maybe an Achilles problem, and you're up against a premier defense that knows something about blitzing and keeping pass pressure on somebody, he's going to have troubles. And that, I think, is going to be one of the big differences in this game. And I think it's one of the reasons, not the only one, but one of the reasons why I think Cincinnati's going to win this one on the road.
Yeah, you know, they say the NFL is a microcosm of the military mentality of the United States. It is. I mean, it's a aggressive game. You got to do the blitz and you got to throw the bomb. You know what I mean? And I think the military analogy is appropriate.
And the team that has more money than any other team in the NFL or in pro sports generally is the Dallas Cowboys. And we start talking about military expenditures globally. There's a real connection there between the American military establishment and the deep state and the way that they use money and the way that Jerry runs the Cowboys. And the results tend to really stink.
Hey, are we the only podcast in history to tie Jerry Jones to the Ukrainian war?
Well, I understand that Dak Prescott is Zelensky's favorite quarterback. No, I made that up, folks. That's not true. Maybe it is true, but I simply ad-libbed that. That's a joke. Dak, forgive me. I don't want to hit you too far below the belt. I leave that to Governor Abbott of Texas, who's in a wheelchair, to suggest openly on Twitter during the game that he was a better field goal kicker than what the Cowboys had yesterday. I thought that was funny, but a tad vicious. And in Meyer's defense, he made his last two field goal attempts. So let's give that kid a break.
Dallas had a great season. It was actually pretty darn good, actually. Not that bad. You know, just they ran into a team that was really, you know, the best defense in the league. And of course, with the offense they have with McCaffrey now, it's pretty good. You know what I mean?
And the Dallas victory over Tampa Bay, which, folks, was the only team in the playoffs as a divisional champion that had a losing record, aging team, Brady past his prime.
Right.
So Dallas wins that game. Yeah. So Dallas wins that game, and all of a sudden people are dreaming.
Pick that as a victory. Yeah.
So now if you want to, want to get into sports comparisons to the military, the American military, which went running out of Afghanistan with its gay flag taken down from the American consulate in Kabul, that's factual, folks. And after 20 some odd years and trillions of dollars and untold lives lost, they lose in Afghanistan, right? This is the same American military, made a mess of Syria. They're going to lose in Syria. The Russian-backed people are rebounding somewhat in Libya, especially, and so forth. This is now an American and Western military establishment that is a little bit like Jerry Jones. You beat Tampa Bay, but all of a sudden you start coming up against the really elite teams. Just think, folks. The Cowboys are out of this thing now, of course, but NATO and the United States and Global Homo, having engaged in this pathetic series of performances since 2001, they want us to fight Russia, China, and Iran combined, which leads me to believe that I can come out of retirement as a boxer who fought once in Golden Gloves and quit, and I still have my brains, right? But I think I'm going to make a prediction. I'm going to come out of pugilistic retirement, and I think I can knock Mike Tyson out in the first round, bare knuckles, if that can be arranged.
There you go. On that note, I'm going to leave it to there. Mr. Dankoff, I want to thank you for being on VT Radio as always. It's a pleasure. Yes. I want you to have a fantastic week, and we'll talk to you soon, okay?
Yes. Good. Cincy and Philly, it's a lock, folks. Dankoff said so. Bet your money that way. And if you lose your you-know-what, just don't come back on me, please.
Okay. Thank you very much. Okay.
If you enjoyed this presentation, hit the like button now. Also, share it with your friends. And don't forget to subscribe so that you don't miss an episode.
VT approves this message.